And good evening. It is Thursday night. It's Intuitive Soul Radio. And I have my guest this evening. Her name is Dorothy. And I'm going to make sure I say this properly because for some reason her last name has been one of these things that I just can't spell either. Ratuzny.
Good. That's good.
All right. So welcome, Dorothy.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
It's great to have you.
Thank you.
I've been looking over your book. She's written a book called The Purpose of Love. And everybody who knows me knows that this is one of my passions. So it's going to be a very interesting evening, I think, tonight, talking about, well, you have two books. So that's exciting. Live Your Life's Purpose, a guidebook for creating and living a purposeful life. And The Purpose of Love, a guidebook for defining and cultivating your most significant relationship. So we're going to discuss both of that because I think it's really interesting how you've talked about love and how you've talked about the significant relationship. And I think what I find really fascinating about that is when I think about love and most of what I've been writing, and I know that you touch on this because it's obviously very important, but I think, you know, we always want this relationship and we keep forgetting that the most important relationship is with ourselves. And so I like how you've written this. I like all the different points. And so we're going to talk about this. I didn't get an opportunity to read the other book, but we'll still talk about it.
Cool.
So, welcome.
Thank you.
Can we start a little bit with what your journey's been, how you've gotten to this point, and, you know, a little bit about, you know, what's made you who you are?
Good question. I'm a psychotherapist. Mm-hmm. So at the time I was writing the first book, Live Your Life's Purpose, and not coincidentally at all, but I was seeing a large number of clients who would come in unhappy with their lives, unhappy with their relationships, unhappy with how they would spend their free time and not feeling very purposeful. And it was really interesting to me how I'm writing about this and I'm seeing all these people firsthand experiencing this. And so it really reiterated the importance of putting something out, putting a book out and helping clients with figuring out what it is we're really meant to do with our lives. So it was funny because at the time I started writing, I'm a multitasker. At the time I was writing Live Your Life's Purpose, I was also writing a book about relationships because that's key. That's central. I mean, you can't go through life without experiencing relationships and experiencing yourself through relationships. So my journey has been as a psychotherapist helping people, but also really working to give them some productive, useful tools, giving people productive tools, hence books that they can also just take away and do some self work with.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, you are a traditional psychotherapist.
Well, that's that's another good question. Traditional in the sense of, you know, university trained and Ontario certified, but there's people that come to me, there's different layers and levels, right? So somebody might come for something like anxiety and depression, and they want some really concrete tools and skill sets that they can take away and use and alleviate their symptoms. And then there's other people that want to get to the underlying issues. And then there's a whole layer of spirituality that, depending on where somebody wants to go, I mean, I had a client come because she wanted to, for example, become a senior in her law firm, and she was a junior, and she wanted it to be more confident in her work. And over time, there's a whole other layer of spirituality that she's now gotten into and experienced and explored because of her desire, but also the ability, I guess, in what I can perhaps offer to clients. So it's not just traditional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, there's a great spiritual depth for which you've written, at least The Purpose of Love. Parts of that I've read of it is definitely holds a lot of spiritual truths and knowledge and wisdom. So you're definitely writing from a higher place as well as offering tools.
They're concrete. Yeah,
exactly.
Thank you.
But you've come around this in a lot of different ways. I mean, you were also part of a TV series.
Yeah. I think there's here it is. the spiritual component, the evolution, comes from self-work. So in other words, you can do television stuff, you can do radio stuff, I used to model at one time years ago. You can do all these different material-driven things, but then there's a whole piece of, okay, so if I want to grow and evolve as a spirit, as a human being, I need to do a lot of personal growth. I need to walk the talk. So I'm most happiest and most fulfilled when I can be working on things that I know are going to feed my soul in a way that you can if you're buying something, if you're shopping, or if you're watching a movie. It's just different. It's different stuff. Yeah.
It's not
anything wrong with watching a movie.
No.
Yeah, it's different stuff.
Different stuff for sure. So you've done a lot.
I've done a little bit. I've got more to do, but yeah.
Yeah. No, I get that sense very clearly. Well, it's exciting, the journey that we're on. I think it's quite an experience that we're going to have over the next few years and in growth and development. So let's talk about the purpose of love. So what's your personal journey been with regards to being able to write that book and writing about love? Because I feel there's a part of you, or there's certainly someone in your life that allows you to reflect back your spiritual beauty.
Okay. And can I ask you, before I answer that, what was something that struck you in reading it and what you read of it? Was there anything that sort of struck you as being, wow, that's interesting, or wow, I never thought of that?
I think as I read it, or bits of it that I have read, it excited me because it was from a place of, you know, deeper spiritual understanding and awareness. I liked that you were able to bring in part of who you are into the book, and it wasn't just on examples of other people, but, you know, personal examples. And I liked how you sort of put it all together in a way that is very easy to understand, and as a tool for other people to get at it. But, you know, it's hard because I've done a lot of writing on this area myself. Mm-hmm. So when I first started, it was like, oh no. You know, when you're writing yourself and you start reading somebody else's and you're thinking you're bringing in all of their material, and it's like, okay, there's bits of this that, you know, is definitely Dorothy's. Mm-hmm. And so when I, you know, part of the book that I'm writing has more to do with, you know, first starting with the inner journey. Because, you know, I think it's a fascinating time right now because it's really about a lot of women and men that are single. There are more women right now that are single than ever in history. And I think, you know, we're balancing out the energy that has been so masculine based. And I think because of that, there's so much transition going on. And so there's so many women right now that are trying to manifest a relationship. And so that's why when it's at that stage, you know, you really have to go within and you really need to be clear about what you're wanting and who you are, and allow that to radiate out, because it's those qualities that are going to bring you the partner that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. So I appreciate you, that feedback. So yeah, and so getting back to the part of me that's throughout this, I guess, is, here it is, working with, and you speak of this, the shift that's occurring where women would wake up, if you will, one day and go, what am I doing in this relationship? I'm not happy. I'm a nursemaid, I'm a mom, I'm a cook, I'm a chauffeur, whatever, whatever. And I've put my stuff aside, or I put my stuff on hold. And this awakening, so to speak, that you talk about, women are searching for more. And I see that in my client base, and they are, they are not willing to sacrifice as much. You still have to fight against traditional and cultural and stereotypical beliefs that are ingrained, but more and more I'm seeing and I'm experiencing clients and friends and people that I know that are truly going, no, this isn't enough anymore. This isn't good enough. So I'm just fortunate that, and I want to just, you know, say to people, you have to be willing to want more. So I'm fortunate enough that in relationships prior to the one that I'm in now, prior to, you know, meeting my soulmate, if you will, I sort of viewed them as stepping stones. And I often use the analogy with clients. It's like every person you date from age 11 or 9 or whatever age it is you start dating, every person hopefully is closer and closer to what your ideal is going to be. And so if you're able to not settle for 60% of what you really want in a mate, then the next person that you are open to meeting will have more of what you really want. And so the struggle that I have is helping clients feel a sense of confidence that, you know what, this relationship isn't enough. And so if I just trust that I will have the opportunity to meet somebody who is 92% of what I'm looking for, which is kind of a topic I talk about, yes, in the book, then I will find that. So my point is, you need to be very clear, as you mentioned, of what it is you want, and you need to be willing to go after it. So my journey is, yeah, I was willing to kind of, well, I was willing to go after what it was I really wanted, and recognize when you find that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, long answer.
No, I liked your answer. I think it's important with so many people that are unhappy, mm-hmm, and searching and wanting to make changes, that the change start within first, that they really, you know, understand their responsibility in everything that they've chosen and done. You talk, let's go into like different areas in your book.
Sure.
You talk about, you know, what is real love,
mm-hmm,
and, you know, healthy, unconditional love, what that's like for people. And, you know, it's hard to see outside of you what that is unless you have it inside.
Right. And you can still be working on it,
sure,
inside, and yet be more conscious of what it looks like outside. But yeah. And for so many people who don't get a chance to fully experience it growing up as a kid, so your template for unconditional love usually is your family of origin, your caretakers, your parents. And no one's family is perfect. So even though you don't experience it full-heartedly, there's opportunities for you to nurture it within yourself. And that's key, right? Mm-hmm. And from there, you can then demand and expect it in your relationships, because you know what it feels like to give it to yourself, or at least working on giving it to yourself. And then therefore you can, you know, check in and make sure that it's also part of what your relationship has, right?
Mm-hmm. No, definitely.
So yeah, the book talks a lot about working on developing a relationship with yourself, a more healthy relationship with yourself, whether before or concurrently with a relationship with a partner.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And so practice makes perfect, which I think is cute. And the real purpose of dating is to get to this 92%.
There's, you know, I've had some clients who seem exasperated because they dated and you know, no closer to getting married and right and all that stuff. And there's so many lessons to be learned in dating, not just about what you want in a partner, but, you know, who you are and how you react and interact and all that. So yeah, I thought, you know, this is important, because we want to get to the end result. We want to get to the walk down the aisle kind of stuff. And it's like, well, hold on. What did you learn about yourself when you dated so-and-so at age 14? What did you learn about yourself when this happened to you at 21? Like, there's so many experiences that if you nail them, if you learn them when you're a little bit older and you're in that great relationship, it's so much easier because you've learned the lessons along the way and you know yourself better and you know again what you want and what you're looking for, right? Because you've learned along the way. Yeah.
So. Still amazing how we still choose to play the patterns though. We might be getting better at it, but we still somehow play out the same roles that I think our parents really taught us.
If you're not aware, then you are playing out the same roles. The key is to be conscious of what you saw in your parents and what your parents taught you, and then consciously decide, do I want to do that or do I want to do something different? It's okay if you want to change a bunch of things from what you learned from your parents, but recognize that what you're doing is just simply being the way they are, right? So choose how you are.
Yeah. So when you look at healing past wounds, because we are looking a lot at the family and using your earliest relationship as a template, which I like how you've written that. And, you know, it's shaped our world based on the relationships we've had with our parents. And often, you know, as we're picking a partner, we're usually picking one or the other. And it's amazing we can pick. We can go from one, and then the next extreme would be the other. And it's interesting how that game sort of still plays out if you're not aware. And the more aware you are, the more then you can step out of that role, and then you can start choosing from a place within your own heart and what your own dreams are. But we have to still heal those first initial wounds or those first initial patterns that we picked up from our parents, because that is where we learned them.
Yeah, I think what happens is we, so a lot of it is unconscious stuff. So you unconsciously are choosing a person that's familiar to one or both of your parents. The cliche is, why do women choose partners that are abusive? Well, there's a pattern, a familiarity of what they know. So they don't seek it out. They don't want to have somebody that's verbally abusive or physically abusive, but it's what they've grown up in and become so accustomed to. So again, it comes back to that being consciously aware of what we've learned in our family of origins and then choosing, I don't want to be doing this anymore. I don't want to be living this way anymore. But even though you may choose somebody with qualities that you specifically are looking for versus somebody that's familiar to one or both parents, yes, there still is an incredible amount of importance in healing relationships from your parents, from your family of origin, because they're not perfect. They learned as they went along. They made mistakes in raising you, right? So in every relationship there's healing work to be done. But the parents, because parents play significant roles in our lives, then
our formative years. I mean, they're there when we create part of our identity.
Right. And so when we get old enough to be able to decide, do I want to still be like this? How I've always been, what I've automatically just learned and taken on from them, or do I want to be different? I mean, at that point, I say we have a choice to not blame our parents and say, well, it's because of them, but we have a conscious choice to be who we want to be. Having said that, you're right. We do still need to go back and revisit some of the hurts and the wounds. And it may be something that we can do in our 20s, or it may be something that we have to do in our 60s because it's just been too painful. We can't look at it till then. But yeah, that's an important part of, again, healing ourselves, right? So, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think a great gift, and I like when you talked about blame, because I think when we talk about this, we so are such a victim mentality society, so we always want to blame somebody else. And I find accepting responsibility, and that doesn't mean blaming ourselves either, but just acknowledging that we have a part to play in how we make choices and, you know, whether you believe or not, that we chose our parents so that we would learn certain lessons and that we would grow. And that, I mean, it's all a dance that we're participating in. So understanding that we, you know, accept responsibility, that empowers us and gives us the freedom to make different choices.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
And so you kind of talk about different areas that are part of the workbook on yourself and then in your relationships. So, okay versus incredible. So that would be the 92% again of, you know, what's incredible and what do we settle for?
There's a chapter, titled, okay. Yeah. How is it? Okay. It's I'm writing book three, so I'm, you know, it's all a blur. Right. It's getting too incredible. So it's not just enough that it's okay. And so that chapter is about taking a look at what you feel is a good relationship and saying, okay, how can I make this even better? Because again, you know, and a perfect example is in my practice, because you see couples who have been together for years and decades, and it's a living thing, a relationship. So when you inevitably kind of let the relationship fend for itself for a while, or you go through some rough patches, or you don't give it enough attention, and it's you find that what is good could be a lot better. Mm-hmm. and or maybe it was barely good and it's really lost a lot of momentum and a lot of important stuff. So this chapter, the difference between okay and incredible, kind of talks to the fact that we don't have to just settle on it being good enough. We can have a really great relationship. Now that may mean too that it may mean having to say goodbye to a person in order to find somebody that's more suitable, more compatible to us. But if you have a good relationship, it doesn't mean that that's enough. It doesn't mean that it will take you through the rest of your life. You need to acknowledge that for you to evolve and grow, your relationship has to be constantly supporting and challenging and fulfilling your life, right? And so, mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah, that's the point of that chapter.
And I think you also mentioned, I mean, there's so many women that want to hold on because they don't think there's ever going to be somebody else. And so they think, well, what if I leave this person, or what if I let this person go and there's nobody else? And I think it's amazing that, you know, as you talk about, these are stepping stones. There's mm-hmm. always somebody else if that's truly what you want. If that's part of who you are, is to be in a loving and joyous relationship, then there will always be somebody. It's just sometimes women hold on and like you're seeing them like the chains around, and then the relationship may have even been gone for 2 years or 20 years, or but that they're still holding on to that where they just can't let it go. And when they are in that state, they really can't bring somebody else in because they're acting and behaving like they're in something still.
I would sort of liken it to self-esteem. So it's not only women, it's not just mm-hmm. women, it's both genders. And I know you're sort of speaking to one group, but I know we know that it's both. And it's really a self-esteem issue, because the less healthy or strong your sense of self is, the more you're going to hold on to a relationship for security, for love, for whatever you feel it's giving you, right? So the idea, you know, I think is, and the book talks about this, it's about not just building your relationship with yourself, but building what's a strong sense of self and self-esteem, so that you don't settle mm-hmm. and that you can let go if it's time to let go. Mm-hmm. There's a whole chapter too that I felt was really important to look at, which is, you know, knowing when to let go of a relationship and knowing when it's time to let go and being able to do that. How do you do that? Like, you can read the signs, but then how do you actually get to a place where you can let go, right? So there's that. There's that that's important too. It's, as you say, you can't fully go on until you have let go, right? So
how do you help people get to that place?
Well, interestingly, Lori, they intuitively know that the relationship isn't serving them. They know that they're not feeling fulfilled and loved in the way they want to. So a lot of that recognition, when they're really honest with themselves, is already there. It's then bringing them to a point of, okay, have you looked at what's possible if you let go, knowing intuitively that you're not having your needs met and it's not the right person for you and it's not the right relationship anymore for what you want. Have you looked ahead and went, okay, what's possible for me? And when you start to do that with a client, they start to even dream a little bit or fantasize about how their life could be or how much more happy they could be or how much more fulfilled they might be, it's easier to move toward letting go. Mm-hmm. Most times we don't look ahead. We kind of, as you say, we kind of just seek to hold on and hope that it's going to change or be what we want it to. But when you start to actually look in a different direction, it's a little bit easier.
I think it's because we're so trained on looking in the past and all of our regrets and all of our pains and all of the things that, you know, we seem to want to replay and replay and replay because we get caught up in this cycle of, you know, the ego versus, you know, who we truly are. And I think often that seems to hold us in a pattern. That's why we keep recreating these same scenarios instead of really moving forward and into the future and on a steady growth. I really like when you talk about where did that thought go?
You've got too many notes. Which is a good thing.
I get, okay. So it what I liked was the growth and evolution and how a relationship, because I feel it's probably one of the most significant tools for our growth and evolution because it's always there right in our face. It's not, you know, unless you're in a part-time relationship, it's very significant in assisting us to move forward or to stay the same, but it is there to guide us to move forward on our evolution.
Yeah. Every relationship we have, whether it's sibling or friendship or parental, they're all means of growing and evolving for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. So the love relationships we have are probably one of the most important facets of learning and growing because we often let down all those guards and those, what's the word, personas with this person we love, and we allow ourselves, in most cases, to be truly vulnerable. So it's like we reveal our true selves to this person that we're in a love relationship with. And so it allows us the potential when we do that to really grow at a higher rate, an exponentially faster rate in a healthy relationship. It also can create a lot of anguish and pain if we're revealing ourselves to somebody who takes advantage of us or is less than respectful of us or is abusive, right? So it can work both ways, but yeah.
Or unavailable, or
yeah, this can go on.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, I still need to remind people that as much as a love relationship adds to the quality or ought to add to the quality of your life, you need to have the relationship with you as being the first, the foundational one. And that's something that everybody, I think, on some level could work on, could improve upon, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating. I don't know quite how that occurred where we've, you know, have such low self-esteem. And I don't know how that, you know, happens because I think you know, we're so incredibly unique and we're so blessed with the journey that we're on. We just keep seeing it as so difficult and, you know, putting so much importance on this, you know, tiny little life that is so rich with emotion and experience. But we give so much power away to everyone and situations and different things that are happening. And I don't know, you know, a lot of people ask, well, you know, how do you build self-love? And I don't, you know, I don't know what the answer is necessarily. I know it happens when you start going within, or when you start having that stronger spiritual awakening or searching, or that guidance that keeps pushing you forward and honoring that.
Mm-hmm. Good segue to my first book.
Okay, let's talk
only,
about that.
Only because there's a whole piece in Live Your Life's Purpose on self-love.
Mm.
Which, I mean, I just put on the table now, so I know you haven't had a chance to look at it. But the first book was about this focusing on oneself. In order to figure out what you want to do with your life, you need to be able to honor yourself and acknowledge your strengths and acknowledge what you're good at innately and what you love to do, which will help direct you toward what your purpose is. So yeah, I mean, you touched on an important point, because we don't necessarily go to school and learn about self-love, and yet fundamentally you have to acknowledge the fact that you need it and it's important in order to get it. So it's the people, and you're one of them, that is more consciously aware, that then goes, okay, you know what, I'm really critical here. I'm really, you know, hard on myself. Like, what's going on? And they start to question, they start to explore, and they start to try to find answers. And that starts their journey, right? But the key is, in the book, this book, Live Your Life's Purpose, talks a lot about this, is learning how to be consciously aware. And when you have that, when you're developing that skill, it's limitless, because you start to tap into all kinds of stuff that you just didn't recognize or were aware of before.
Mm-hmm.
She's thinking.
Yeah.
More questions.
Yeah. No, actually, what I was thinking was, oh, such a soul sister.
Thanks. But you have to tell us, I mean, maybe people know, but I don't know, what would be the title of your book on love? I'm curious.
Oh, yeah. We don't know that yet.
Oh. Okay. Just wondered.
But, I'll let you know when I do.
Good.
Oh, yeah. No, I have no idea. I'm not debating whether we go back into the love book or whether we start on Live Your Life's Purpose. But, you know, part of the aspects that you ask people to look at is, you know, okay, the okay versus incredible, but also looking at respect and understanding, forgiveness, honesty, and self-esteem. Oh, and expectations, which is so important.
That little piece, and I felt there was these concepts, like you just said, you know, forgiveness and acceptance. I felt that there's, sorry to interrupt, but there's these concepts that I thought, these are important little markers and things that people have to, they know it intuitively that they're important, but they have to work at these things. And this whole little part in this one chapter on expectations came out of, again, I'm, you know, banging my forehead. It's like, it came out of this argument I had with Ryan about, you know, about the expectations I was placing on him, and him not even being aware of what they were. And of course, I'm the one that's reacting to him not doing something, but he doesn't even know what I'm expecting him to do. So I thought, you know what, again, another example of how real life, you know, so eloquently speaks to what I'm sure other people also experience, right? And so I got to include that, but yeah.
Well, it's really important. I think expectations is huge, because it's our ego wanting to react in some way to something that's, you know, usually a past thing that, you know, we're not always completely aware of. And it's, you know, impacting the person you're with now when it has nothing to do with them at all and they don't know any of it. So they can't, because 100 people can watch one experience and have 100 different perceptions of what happened and what their perceptions have to do with how they grew, how they, you know, that first initial, how did you put it? That first initial, our family is a template. So that first template of how they were brought up is really how, where your expectations come from. And I think it's, I think it was very key. I liked how it was at the end though.
Don't forget this part.
Don't forget that part.
It really, you know, it's really about communication, and that's probably the number one thing couples come in for counseling around. But if we can communicate what our expectations are from different backgrounds, different cultural, you know, ways, different family of origins, if we can communicate, you know, I expect you to put the lid back on this, like even something as small as that, if you can communicate what you're putting on somebody else, then they have an understanding at least as to A, how come you're angry when they don't do something or when they do do something, and B, you can have a dialogue about, well, is this a reasonable expectation, right? So it's communication.
It is communication.
And it's, I was going to say, it's also a little bit control because we there's that word again, we expect people to do what we know, what we've always done, and it's like, That's control on some level too, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see in any of the vignettes of client examples, which by the way, I you know, approached clients and said, Can I share some of your story? And this is what it is, and is this okay? And they were all so wonderful about saying, yeah, of course, that's wonderful. But I wanted to ask, in reading some of the vignettes, were people often say, you know, yeah, you know, I recognize that couple was like, you know, what, you know, we experienced. Was there anything that sort of spoke to you when you were reading maybe little parts of the vignettes? Like, could you relate to any of the examples? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, a lot. Okay. I mean, I think it's very key to have examples in because then it relates it back in a way that is tangible, that you can go, oh yeah, I do that all the time, or oh yeah, I worked on that. I remember that.
Cool.
I think it's necessary.
I think it helps too for people reading the book because it's like they can, as you're sort of saying, they realize they're not alone in their experience, and there's some really explicit examples of what I think speak to a lot of people, and yet how often would we talk about some of the very personal examples unless you have a bit of a story of or an illustration of someone else's life. But I think hopefully that's helpful to have people, you know, recognize themselves in an example from a client or say, yeah, you know, that was me 5 years ago, and be able to relate on that level. So I'm hoping that that's helpful for people reading the book as well.
Yeah. I think that's very helpful. Yeah. When you talk about honesty, I mean, I guess all of this is communication. And I think, you know, when you said that, it reminds me so much of so many women who, and again, a lot of my clients are women, so I use that a lot as an example. But I mean, I think they say to me that they, you know, okay, so I'm ready to leave. And it's like, well, have you talked about it? It's apparently more safe to just want to leave than it is to actually sit down and, you know, face some of these deeper communications that need to happen so that you can grow from it, and two, you know, you can both understand one another. So that I think it's really interesting how we try to avoid, and I don't know, like I always relate back to, you know, something, you know, as you were growing up, you know, girls were to be seen and not heard, or, you know, if you were good, they rewarded you. So you expect everybody to reward you when you're trying to be good, even though you've created the definition of what that means. And so not everybody knows what to do that would reward you, nor do they know, you know, what your definition of you being good is without you being able to communicate it. And I guess that would be expectations. And it would be a lot of the things that you talked about, respect and honesty and forgiveness. And I mean, they're all things that, you know, you need to be able to be aware of within yourself as well as be able to communicate.
And we don't, I mean, they say Geminis are excellent communicators, but I think everybody, I don't think it comes easy for people to communicate. And I think everybody would only benefit from improving their communication. We don't say what we really mean. We don't say what we really are thinking. We don't speak about when we're hurt. You know, we close up or we react or we hit a wall or something. Like, we behave in a way that maybe protects our ego rather than just be vulnerable and open. So there's a lot of good learning around communication that we don't get, again, in school. We don't necessarily get taught, you know, in our family. So again, it comes back to, okay, how consciously aware are you in terms of how well you communicate? Are you understanding someone else? Are you able to actively listen back what you heard so that they know you know what they meant, and like all that stuff. I mean, it's the more aware you are, the more you can improve your communication skills, mm-hmm. right?
And I'm assuming probably that's a big part of what you do as a therapist, is help people understand what they're trying to communicate.
Yeah, and I have to come back to, therapy is an opportunity for people to really look at themselves, and maybe largely in a way that they haven't before. So if, I always say, if I'm doing my job, I'm asking questions to help them think about themselves and their situations and their problems in a different way. And so in looking at themselves and their lives in a different way, they often come to the best solution for themselves. So it isn't me knowing them best. It's them seeing themselves or thinking about themselves differently so that they come to their best conclusion. And so if they're, and through that, hopefully what I'm also helping them with is becoming more consciously aware of themselves and what they're doing. Mm-hmm. It's a small thing. It's a simple thing, but it's huge. It's huge. It's huge.
It is huge.
I say it three times.
Yeah. Really big.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about soulmates and sure. spiritually conscious.
Ooh, that's another chapter. That was interesting because when I was writing that, I thought to myself, well, I'd like to include this. This is important. And I wondered, would people embrace the notion of a spiritually conscious relationship? Would people embrace, even though we use the word soulmate, would they embrace the fact that there actually quite feasibly is a soulmate, right? For, you know, a love partner that's a soulmate. So yeah, there's this chapter on what it means to have a spiritually conscious relationship. And it kind of goes hand in hand with finding the most suitable partner. And that often would also equate to being your soulmate. And I want to just, you know, preface and say, like, everyone has their own personal beliefs. I think we have more than one soulmate in our lives. I think we can have, you know, friendships that are soulmates and siblings that are soulmates and even a parent that could be a soulmate. But a love relationship, if you embrace that notion of, if you find a soulmate who you end up being in a love relationship with, wow, how powerful can that be? How amazing can that be? And so,
unless you're not ready, and then it's hell.
But then is it really your soulmate? I mean, it could be somebody that you, for whatever reason, have come together with, and this is just sort of my maybe take on it, come together with in order to learn some things, but maybe it's not a soulmate relationship that's, in its truest sense, one that, you know, you spend the rest of your life with mm-hmm. that person mm-hmm. in a physical sense. But yeah, so the spiritual consciousness is about the fact that in a love relationship with a soulmate, how I talk about it is there's the opportunity there with a soulmate to really explore and allow for the individual spiritual journeys of both people, and that there's a compatibility in the sense that they support and recognize the importance of each other's spiritual journey, and whatever that means. And one person might be a little bit farther along or in a different sort of place than the other spiritually, but they're on their own spiritual journeys. And yet they can come together and they can have connections. Here it is, connections on so many different levels. Intellectually stimulating conversations, emotionally fulfilling a relationship, and conversations about spirituality. And so the communication is at such a deep and honest and raw and vulnerable level that there is nothing they couldn't talk about or share.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually, I mean, I would love to know the number of people in the world that would say they found their soulmate in and having a love relationship with their soulmate and have this sort of sense of spiritual compatibility. There's also the notion that in a love relationship, when people grow apart or when it's time to end a relationship, it's partly because there's an incompatibility on an emotional level or on a spiritual level, where you might say your purpose for being together is complete. And that kind of sounds sad in a way, because it's like, well, if you're having an amazing relationship with someone and there's all kinds of important elements and there's a spirituality compatibility component, how come it would even come to an end? And it's like, perhaps in your lifetime that relationship needs to be complete in order for you to have the next, perhaps even better experience, you know, in a soulmate relationship.
Yeah.
So, but when people, you know, I hear this and people say, well, you know, we just kind of fell out of love, or we just didn't any longer have things in common with each other. Those are some examples. Those are some languaging to me that cues that maybe that person's relationship has just come to an end. It's not bitter. It's not anguished. It's not hating each other. It's just whatever you've come together to fulfill and to do, it's now complete and you can move on, right? And by the way, if that's the case, I probably wouldn't. I have this belief that a soulmate love relationship is one that transcends so many levels and is fulfilling on so many levels that when you find it, when you have it, that is the person that you are happy and content and fulfilled with for the rest of your life. Now, I could prove to be wrong, I'll let you know at the end of my life, but if there is an ending to a relationship, if people have become spiritually incompatible, then my sense is that perhaps that's not your true soulmate relationship. You may have come together, you know, to fulfill a purpose, but that's not your true soulmate. Just some thoughts. Just some thoughts.
Well, that you're very passionate about. And passionate about, which is lovely. So we are like whipping right along here for time. What do you want to talk about? Live your life's purpose.
I want to say that it's a book that a 16-year-old could pick up and use to help them figure out what they should do with their life. A 47-year-old who's unhappy with their job and the climb of the corporate ladder just wasn't fulfilling to them could pick up and go, oh my God, I'm doing the completely wrong thing. You know, I should be doing this. It's a book really for anyone. And because I continue to hear so many people being unhappy and unsatisfied and overwhelmed in their lives, it continues to speak to me how important it is that people, and this is a tool for doing this, to people to be able to step back and reassess what they've been on the hamster wheel for and go, okay, wait a second. I actually like interior design. What am I doing as a legal assistant? Right? And be able to sort of, and often with the help of maybe somebody else, like a therapist or somebody who's trained in this, but be able to step back and go, wait a second, like, I'm not happy. Let's change it. And know that they have a choice. Mm. Know that they have a choice. I had a client in my office last night who it didn't dawn on her. And she's, I think the age, you know, I mentioned 47, didn't dawn on her that she wasn't choosing her life. She wasn't choosing any part of her life. All of the volunteer work that she was doing, her important corporate job, her time with family and grandkids, she wasn't choosing any of it. She was just saying yes to everything and being overwhelmed and overworked and getting physically ill. Mm. And that's just one of probably many examples.
Mm-hmm. But it's so huge.
So if you're unhappy in any part of your life, then this or a book like this is really important to read and go through. Yeah.
There are a lot of books out there on, you know, finding your soul's purpose or your life's purpose. What makes yours unique and different?
It brings cognitive therapy principles into the book. It teaches clients, it teaches readers rather, tools and strategies for actually implementing change and giving them tools to be able to go from I don't like what I'm doing to knowing what they would rather be doing. Or in some cases, clients, people, readers who know they'd rather be doing this. Well, how do I get to knowing I'd rather do this than what I'm doing? How to actually do it, how to actually implement it. So The book gives readers tools and for getting from where they are to where they really want to be. And also, because there's a lot of cognitive therapy principles throughout the book, they're able to apply.
Can we back up and say cognitive therapy is?
Cognitive therapy is one of the most widely researched and widely practiced models of psychotherapy in the world today. It's about 30 years old, developed by Aaron Beck to treat depression.
Okay.
And then it became this model for treating everything from anxiety to personality disorders to grief to relationship issues, because it's based around principles of thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, and it teaches clients how to recognize that the way they behave and the way they feel is driven by what they think, and how to change the way they think, and not just to say, oh, if I want to feel better, I got to think positive. No, it's far more than that. That doesn't necessarily even always work. It's about challenging the way they're thinking, getting, putting a pause, if you will, on the story that they've been running through their head about the way they see the world and what they perceive, and going, hold on a second, where's the evidence that how I'm thinking is accurate or true or correct? And then being able to create more rational thoughts for themselves and just recognizing the fact that what you think about determines how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And how you feel determines how you're going to react. So there's all kinds of great important real life principles that clients can sort of, readers rather, can take with them and apply to other issues of in their lives, right? So it's not just, they aren't just tools that they can use to help them find their life's purpose. It's tools that they can help, that they can use to help them navigate through their lives in a more successful way.
That's a nice way to put it.
Mm, thank you.
Wow.
Long answers, eh? Jeez.
No, it's great.
That's a long answer.
So you mentioned that part of this is, you know, discovering self-love.
Mm-hmm.
What are the other areas, or how important is that in getting and understanding your life purpose?
If you don't feel confident in your abilities, if you don't recognize your worth and your value, if you doubt yourself, if you're critical of yourself, it's going to be a lot harder to get to, yeah, but I really want to do this with my life. So there are some basic fundamental tools like self-love and developing conscious awareness, and there's even tools on conscious breathing and conscious thinking, so that you've got some support, even reading a book, you've got some support in helping you to actually be able to facilitate, to get to a place where you can actually contemplate seriously what it is you really want to do. Because it's scary. Like, people know often what they want to do, even when they're not doing it. But it's scary to think, okay, how am I ever going to do that? Mm. I'm too old. I don't have the experience. Like, how do I start now? How do I give up this well-paying job? So there's a lot of tools that they need to have, right? And so, yeah, it's nice when they come into a therapist's office and they can receive that help. But there's also a tool of a book that they can use too, right, to get there.
Mm. Yeah.
It's yours, by the way. I brought it for you just to have in your collection. Yeah,
thank
yeah.
you.
You're welcome.
I think I want to refer it to a few people. So when you do have all of these self-doubts and problems, what do you, I mean, other than reading the book, what do you recommend for people when they do have all of this negative self-talk? Because that is one of the things that is the cognitive therapy. It's if you're having all of these issues where you're always putting yourself down, what do you do to just change that up?
It's as simple, again, as working at being more aware of what you're saying to yourself, the constant dialogue, the self-talk. And the first step is sort of recognizing, okay, when I say this stuff to myself, how do I feel? And or catching yourself when you're feeling down or when you're feeling anxious or when you're feeling scared or whatever emotion it is, and going, okay, hold on, what was I just thinking that I'm feeling so terrible about myself? So it's going back to the basic of developing tools to be more aware of what you're saying to yourself and how that affects how you feel. Yeah.
So the more aware you are, then it's a matter of changing how you're thinking. Like, is that enough to start? Because I know, you know, The Secret came out and there's a lot of stuff out there that, you know, the intent is really positive, but it doesn't always give you the tools and the way to actually achieve some of these goals. It's not just about affirmations, and it's not just, I mean, there's so many more things that need to be brought in.
Yeah. And the idea behind cognitive therapy, which is different than something like affirmations, is your first step is to be more aware of how you're thinking. And then it's to challenge some of that incorrect or irrational or problematic thinking in order to change, right, what you're saying to yourself. So, for example, I can't do this. Is that really true? Like, would you be in this job if you really couldn't do this? So it's just adjusting some of the verbiage and some of the languaging to make it more accurate. So instead of saying, oh, I'd be failing if I gave this up. Well, really, would you be failing? Like what is failing? Like, would you be failing to give it up, or would you be choosing something that you like to do? Like, so it's about challenging. In cognitive therapy, they're called irrational or distorted thoughts. It's challenging some of the ways in which we think and the story that we play in our mind to then creating more accurate ways of thinking. That's really how it is. And that's different than saying, I am happy or I am good enough. It's different than saying affirmations.
Yeah.
You've got the proof behind it, which is very different.
Yeah. Very good. Okay. Well, we're almost at the hour. Is there, you want to tell people how they can get a hold of you? How they can find more information about you, and where they can find your books.
Sure. Thank you. Yeah, so I guess the easiest thing is probably going to my website, www.dorothyvertusny.com. Shall I spell that?
Yeah, I think so.
So www.dorothy, D-O-R-O-T-H-Y, Vertusny, R-A-T-U-S-N-Y. .com. You can buy Live Your Life's Purpose from my website. It's also available in select bookstores. And The Purpose of Love, brand new in this fall of last year, is available amazon.ca chapters. It's in stores everywhere. It's also available from the publisher Insomniac Press. So, yeah.
Great.
Thank you.
And you have a practice
In
Yonge and Bloor?
Yeah, I'm at Yonge and Bloor, and I've also got an office in Thornhill. So two office locations. Nice. Yeah, yeah.
And that information is all on your website.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you, Lori.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
I hope to have you back.
I'd love that. Yeah, great. You're a great host. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So that's Intuitive Soul. We'll be back next week. We'll be in Puerto Vallarta. Awesome. And I look forward to connecting with you soon. Take care and hope you have a great day.